Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the first quarter 2015 JDSU earnings conference call. My name is Jackie, and I will be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. We will be facilitating a question-and-answer session towards the end of the presentation. If you would like to participate in this portion of the call, please press star followed by one at any time during the conference. If you require operator assistance, please press star zero, and I will be happy to assist you. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Bill Ong, Senior Director of Investor Relations. Please proceed, sir.
Thank you, Jackie. Welcome to JDSU's fiscal first quarter 2015 earnings call. My name is Bill Ong, Senior Director of Investor Relations. Joining me on today's call is Tom Wexler, CEO, and Rex Jackson, CFO. Alan Lowe, President of our Communications and Commercial Optical Products Business Unit, CCOP, and CEO Designate of SpinCo, would also join us for Q&A. Please note this call will include forward-looking statements about the company's financial performance and plans to separate the business into two independent publicly traded companies. These statements are subject to risks and uncertainties and could cause actual results to differ materially from our current expectations. We encourage you to review our most recent filings with the SEC, particularly the risk factors in Part 1, Item 1A of our annual report on Form 10-K filed with the SEC on August 26, 2014. The forward-looking statements, including guidance we provide during this call, are valid only as of today. JDSU undertakes no obligation to update these statements. Please note also that unless otherwise stated, all results are non-GAAP, which excludes, among other items, amortization of acquired technology and other intangibles, stock-based compensation, and restructuring charges. We also expect to exclude certain costs we have incurred and will be incurring as we prepare for and execute the separation. We include a detailed reconciliation of these non-GAAP results to our GAAP financials, as well as a discussion of their usefulness and limitations in today's earnings press release. The release, plus our supplementary slides and historical financial tables, are available on our website. Finally, we are recording this call today and will make the recording available by 6:00 P.M. Pacific Time this evening on our website. I would now like to turn the call over to Tom.
Thank you, Bill, and welcome to those joining the call today. Given our recently announced plans to separate into two public companies, we have shortened our prepared remarks today to allow more time for Q&A. Focusing first on our quarterly results, our fiscal first quarter 2015 revenue at $433.6 million exceeded the high end of our guidance range. Book-to-bill exceeded one for both CCOP and our Optical Security and Performance business segments, but was below one for Network Enablement, Service Enablement, and JDSU as a whole. Gross margin was 49%, with Network Enablement at 66.3%, a fourth consecutive quarterly record, Service Enablement at 69.1%, and Commercial Lasers at 50.7%, also records. Service Enablement was profitable and ahead of our schedule. Earnings per share also exceeded guidance significantly at $0.14 per share. Turning to our separation strategy, with several years of heavy lifting behind us and our business segments operationally fit, investing to win and targeting growth in a number of new areas, we are confident that this is the ideal time for the separation. As I highlighted in our mid-August earnings call, in fiscal 2014, we completed several acquisitions to strengthen Service Enablement, phased out lower margin products within OSP, reestablished CCOP and Datacom, and gained further traction in Commercial Lasers. As our results show, what will be the new CCOP, which we refer to as SpinCo, and the new Network Enablement, Service Enablement, and OSP, which we refer to as NewCo, are starting out the fiscal year 2015 with a strong foundation and solid financial results, providing positive momentum as we move closer to completing the spin. The timing is right for both SpinCo and NewCo to sharpen their focus on growth opportunities as networks scale to higher transmission speeds, 40G in data centers and enterprise, 100G in long haul and metro, and move towards software-based architectural changes, including software-defined networks and network function virtualization. SpinCo will emerge with a clean balance sheet, a number one position in optical telecom, and share growth in Datacom. SpinCo's Commercial Laser business is entering a new growth phase in both micromachining and macromachining, and this quarter posted its second consecutive quarterly revenue and gross margin record. Alan Lowe has strengthened his core management team by adding Aaron Tachibana as CFO designate. Aaron is presently JDSU's Vice President of Finance and Global Controller. We continue to target the third quarter of 2015 to complete the separation and are confident we can achieve that goal. With NewCo, consisting of network enablement, service enablement, and OSP, we have the unique opportunity to deliver greater value to our customers by providing unmatched end-to-end network visibility across service provider and enterprise networks. Our customers need this visibility to profitably scale in order to meet unrelenting demand and the ongoing proliferation of connected devices and applications. I will remain as CEO and Rex continues as CFO of NewCo. Paul McNabb, who recently joined us as Chief Marketing and Strategy Officer, will also serve on the NewCo senior management team. Paul's extensive experience includes 16 years at Cisco in executive marketing, strategy, and engineering roles, as well as founding a startup that developed disruptive software-based network solutions. NE and SE investments made over the last several years uniquely position NewCo to deliver new solutions that address the virtualized network of the future. As we execute NE and SE restructuring initiatives, we'll do so with our NewCo strategic vision in mind and look forward to sharing more information about the roadmap to realize this vision as we move closer to the separation. I'll now turn the call over to Rex.
Thank you, Tom. Consistent with prior earnings calls, we have a supplemental earnings slide deck posted on jdsu.com that provides current quarter earnings results and next quarter guidance outlook. JDSU's fiscal first quarter 2015 revenue was $433.6 million and exceeded our revenue guidance range of $405 million to $425 million. Gross margin at 49% improved 270 basis points from a year ago, reflecting continued operational discipline, favorable product mix from SE, strength in commercial lasers, and OSP's last-time byproduct exit last year. First quarter revenue grew 1.1% from a year ago. However, excluding approximately $30 million of 3D sensing and last-time buy revenues in last year's first quarter, our core network, laser, and anti-counterfeiting businesses' combined revenue grew 8.7% year-on-year. Operating expenses at $173 million declined 6.5% sequentially from $185.1 million on tighter expense controls and benefits from restructuring activities initiated in fiscal 2014. Operating margin at 9.1% exceeded guidance of 6-8% on higher than expected revenue and up from 8.3% last year, driving a better than expected EPS at 14 cents, flat to last quarter and up from 13 cents a year ago. On the balance sheet, total cash at $880.9 million remains strong. Operating cash flow of $40.8 million continues our string of 8 straight years of positive cash flow. Since our CCOP spinoff announcement on September 10th, we've made great progress in separating assets and resources, including personnel, between the pending two new companies. We will set up SpinCo to be lean, with sufficient capital and no long-term debt. We have received a lot of questions about our net operating loss carryforward since our Analyst Day event in September. We have about $6 billion of U.S. federal NOLs and about $3 billion of U.S. state-level and international NOLs. We expect substantially all of these NOLs will stay with NewCo, as we believe this is where they can provide the greatest long-term value. However, we do expect our tax assets will enable us to establish SpinCo with an effective forward U.S. tax rate substantially below full domestic rates. We remain confident that we can hit our $50 million savings target we announced at Analyst Day. The cost reductions are expected to be approximately one quarter to a third in COGS and the balance in OPEX. We'll be taking associated restructuring charges beginning in Q2, with the majority of the charges in Q3 and Q4, and a goal of taking substantially all charges in FY15. Accordingly, while we expect some savings in FY15, the primary impact will be seen in FY16. Finally, we also expect to incur some incremental make-before-break expenses associated with site and team consolidations this year and next, which we will identify each quarter and confirm in later calls. We continue to expect the cash cost to separate the company and achieve the estimated $50 million in annual savings is $75 to $100 million, trending to the high end of that range. Turning now back to the first fiscal quarter, CCOP ended the quarter with a book-to-bill ratio above 1. Optical communications was above parity, and commercial lasers was below. CCOP revenue of $209.3 million was up 2.3% from the first quarter of last year and reached the top end of our guidance range of $200 to $210 million. Optical communications revenue of $167.1 million declined 5.2% from a year ago, reflecting lower 3D sensing revenue of approximately $22 million, partially offset by higher telecom and datacom revenues. The optical component pricing decline was 3.8% quarter-on-quarter, higher than typical first quarters. However, we continue to expect ASP declines for FY15 will be consistent with our recent ranges of 10 to 14%. Commercial laser revenue achieved its second consecutive record at $42.2 million, up 48.6% from a year ago, driven by strength from Gen 2 fiber lasers. Fiber laser revenue was $12.4 million, up 12.7% from the prior quarter, as our partner Ramada continues to ramp our Gen 2 fiber laser used for industrial cutting applications. We also saw typical seasonal strength in our micro machining or solid-state lasers as customers add capacity in anticipation of the holiday consumer electronics ramp. We also continue to be pleased with the progress of our ultra-fast laser business as we continue to seed major OEMs with these products for testing and product development. We expect these efforts to drive continued strength in calendar 2015. CCOP's gross margin at 32.5% increased 50 basis points from a year ago, reflecting primarily higher commercial laser mix. Optical communications gross margin at 27.9% declined 160 basis points from a year ago, reflecting primarily lower fab absorption from the decline in 3D sensing revenue. Commercial lasers gross margin reached record levels of 50.7% and rose by 320 basis points compared to last year and by 80 basis points compared to the prior quarter record on higher volume levels. Operating margin at 12% decreased by 130 basis points from a year ago and was at the bottom end of the guidance range of 12 to 14% due to higher levels of R&D spending to support key product and market initiatives. Fiscal Q1 sales mix was 75% telecom, 18% datacom, and 7% consumer and other, versus a year ago's 66%, 17%, and 17%, respectively. Our 3D sensing revenue declined by more than $4 million sequentially, which we believe should be the low point as we have started to ship production units for PC-related applications. Datacom revenue grew 2.4% year-on-year and was up 14.8% sequentially. Higher speed transmission, defined as 40G and 100G, continues to grow and represents more than 48% of overall transmission revenue versus the prior quarter at 41%. 40G and 100G modulators in the telecom business experienced 29% sequential revenue growth. For fiscal Q2 guidance, we expect CCOP revenue to be $205 million plus or minus $5 million and operating margin to be 11.5% plus or minus 1 percentage point. Our below-target operating margin guidance reflects expected lower laser revenue along with continued growth in R&D. Our CCOP revenue midpoint guidance of $205 million versus $198 million in Q2 of last year reflects a 3.5% year-on-year increase driven by commercial lasers, telecom, and datacom, and offsetting approximately $15 million lower year-on-year second quarter 3D sensing revenue. As we indicated last quarter, we saw a very strong book-to-bill ratio for our submarine product line, which translated into a twofold submarine revenue increase in fiscal Q1. New transoceanic cables typically precede new greenfield network deployments where the cables terminate. Accordingly, we see the submarine business as a positive leading indicator for our optical communications portfolio in calendar 2015. Commercial lasers are expected to be slightly down sequentially, reflecting seasonally softer micro-machining sales, while fiber lasers are expected to grow further in fiscal Q2. Our product pipeline in lasers is strong. At our Analyst Day event, we previewed the 6-kilowatt fiber laser to address our new entry into the welding market, a $350 million SAM opportunity for CCOP. We are also broadening our nanosecond laser product line with a higher power, higher productivity Q-switch laser that is expected to be released to production by the end of fiscal 2015. Last week, we introduced our direct diode laser that provides up to 2 kilowatts of power use for sheet metal cutting applications and complements our Gen 2 fiber laser product. DDL has significant advantages over CO2 laser-based systems in processing speed, beam quality, and overall cost of ownership. Turning to the NewCo businesses, as a reference point, NSE revenue at $181 million was up 5.3% from last year's $171.9 million. NSE gross margin expanded 490 basis points versus last year to 67%, reflecting the contributions from service enablement. Network enablement and service enablement's book-to-bill ratios were below one. NE's revenue of $132.8 million declined 8.5% from a year ago, but exceeded our guidance of $120 to $130 million. Lighter bookings and the year-on-year revenue decline reflect the softer North American carrier spending environment impacted by architectural discussions and M&A distractions in our customer base. This was partially offset by year-on-year strength in cable, fiber, video, and base station test. Gross margin at 66.3% improved 270 basis points from last year, primarily due to higher margin product mix and to a lesser degree from supply chain efficiencies. Operating margin at 15.1% declined 40 basis points year-on-year, but exceeded our guidance range of 10 to 12%. Despite year-on-year revenue declines from our service provider customers, new customers from new products allowed NE to expand gross margins and deliver a double-digit operating margin. We expect operating margins to continue to be healthy due to a combination of new products, expense controls, restructuring activities, and improved gross margin. For SE, revenue reached $48.2 million, growing 79.9% year-on-year and exceeding our guidance range of $40 to $45 million. The upside was driven by enterprise strength from network instruments, along with early customer acceptances on a number of projects. Year-on-year revenue increases also came from other elements of our SE portfolio, including location intelligence, RAN solutions, packet portal, and mobile assurance. Gross margin was a record 69.1%, up 1,500 basis points from last year, and SE turned profitable with operating margin at 1.7%, above the guidance range of a margin loss of 7.5% to 4.5%. Profitability was driven by high-margin enterprise business from network instruments, higher revenues in our other SE businesses, lower allocations of sales expenses based on relative bookings between NE and SE, and controls on discretionary spending. Moving on to OSP, revenue of $43.3 million was down 17.5% from a year ago, up 1.6% quarter-on-quarter and just above the midpoint of our guidance range of $42 million to $44 million. The year-on-year revenue decline reflects our FY14 exit of the lower-margin thin film coating businesses, which contributed approximately $6 million in Q1 of last year. Sequential revenue improvement reflects growth in our anti-counterfeiting business and a slight increase in our government business. OSP's book-to-bill ratio was above 1.25. Gross margin at 53.6% improved 370 basis points versus a year ago on lower revenue levels, which reflects the benefits of our product exits last year. Operating margin at 36.7% improved 30 basis points from a year ago, from the aforementioned gross margin benefit despite substantially lower revenue and exceeded the guidance range of 34 to 36%. Looking forward to Q2, network enablement revenue is expected to be $140 million, plus or minus 5, with an operating margin of 20%, plus or minus 1 percentage point. Service enablement revenue is expected to be $50 million, plus or minus 2.5 million, with an operating margin loss of 9%, plus or minus 2 percentage points. Any bookings are expected to be relatively lighter in fiscal Q2, reflecting the weak carrier spending environment, while SE bookings are expected to show continued strength. Any operating margins are expected to improve, while SE operating margins are expected to be highly variable, as NE and SE relative bookings variability impacts cost allocations and thus materially impacts operating profit or loss. As a result, it will continue to be useful to look at NE and SE on both a separate and a combined basis in making historical comparisons. Overall operating margin improvements reflect supply chain efficiencies, tight cost controls, and increasing high-margin SE revenue. We expect OSP revenue to be $50 million, plus or minus $1 million, with operating margin of 37.5%, plus or minus 1 percentage point. The improvements are coming from anti-counterfeiting and OSP's focus on higher-margin products. We are also continuing to invest in the consumer electronics, government, and healthcare markets to position OSP for growth in calendar 2015. I'll now turn the call back over to Tom.
Thanks, Rex. For overall JDSU, we expect the fiscal second quarter revenue to be $445 million, plus or minus $12 million, and non-GAAP operating margin to be 9.5%, plus or minus 1 percentage point. Our revenue midpoint of $445 million is down 0.6% from last year's $447.6 million. We would point out that approximately $26 million in revenue from a year ago is attributed to the 3D sensing and OSP last-time buys that is largely being made up in fiscal Q2 this year from revenue in our networking markets. Thus, our year-over-year revenue growth of 5.6% in our core businesses reflects networking market share gains. We have also widened our revenue guidance range of $20 million to $24 million to reflect current macro uncertainty. Our non-GAAP EPS guidance of 15 cents plus or minus 3 cents has likewise been extended from a range of 4 cents to 6 cents. In closing, network industry's trends are moving rapidly. Disruptive technologies like SDN and NFV are emerging while 100G extends into the metro market and 40G is being installed in our Tier 1 data centers. Near term, U.S. carrier spending remains weak, with initiatives such as Domain 2.0 expected to improve network investment efficiency while creating technological disruptions in the industry. We believe creating SpinCo and NewCo will put these new companies in a stronger position to capture additional opportunities as the markets evolve. I would like to thank our employees, business partners, and shareholders for your interest and continued support of JDSU. I'll turn the call over to Bill to begin the Q&A session.
Thank you, Tom. I'd like to ask everyone to limit the discussion to one question and one follow-up. Jackie, let's begin the question and answer session.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2. Please limit your questions to one and one follow-up. Press star 1 to begin, and please stand by for your first question. And your first question comes from the line of Amitabh Passi with UBS. Please proceed. Your line is open. Can you please check your mute feature?
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can, Amitabh.
Sorry. Hey, Tom, just a couple questions for me. First, just on the SE side, if you could help clarify where the upside surprise came from. You obviously hit break-even much sooner than anticipated, but you're then guiding again to an operating loss in the next quarter, so I was a little confused by some of the ebb and flow in SE in particular.
Okay. Well, yes, we had a strong quarter in SE. Part of it was network instruments, some larger projects around mobile assurance, and then RAN. Part of the fluctuation you'll see in the profitability will be how we allocate cost based on bookings. And as you know, SE will tend to be a bit lumpy on the bookings because of the large size of some of these projects. So what happened is projected into next quarter is that we're going to have a significant amount of bookings, which will attract larger allocation of costs. So that's causing the lumpiness. We still believe that by our fiscal Q4, we'll be able to get to a consistent break-even or profitability, but between now and then it will be a bit lumpy based on those allocations primarily.
Okay, and just as a quick follow-up for you, Rex, does your guidance for the December quarter incorporate any separation-related expenses within OPEX? I'm just wondering, is that included in the 15 cents plus or minus 3 cents, or are you going to pro forma that out?
It does not include any expenses, and we will be taking that out and making it very visible.
Okay, I'll step back in the queue. Thanks.
Thanks.
And your next question comes from the line of Dimitri Nettis with William Blair. Please proceed.
Thank you. I have two questions. One is, could you give us a lay of the land in terms of the North America carriers? I understand how you're guiding for next quarter, but is there any hope for recovery in 2015? Do you expect that to be in the first half, second half? I mean, how do you view the CapEx environment in North America specifically, and what's your visibility is like on that front? And then also, if you could comment on other parts of the world, for example, what you're seeing in EMEA and Asia. It sounds like those two markets came back, or actually were pretty strong this quarter. Do you expect that to continue in the forthcoming months or quarters? Thank you.
Okay. Dimitri, I'll talk about the NAM carriers, which is mostly the NSE business. So we do continue to see weakness in North America. We do see one of the four major Tier 1 carriers that we support in North America is at a reasonable run rate. The other three are well below what we would normally So that continues to be weak. Again, we believe most of it is because of the disruptive nature of what's going on with the architectural shifts in SDN and NFV, as well as some M&A activity that's out there. So we don't, as I mentioned on the last earnings call, I didn't expect any type of recovery until we get into our second half of our fiscal year, and I think that's still pretty accurate. We don't have great visibility, but we do know that in most cases of those North American carriers, they are getting behind on their investments, so there's some indication that that will pick up, but still limited visibility. I think I'll touch on NSE for rest of the world and then have Alan speak to from a CCOP standpoint. We did see Europe picking up somewhat EMEA, including the extended areas. So that is not fully rebounded, but we do see some pickup there. We saw reasonable strength in parts of Asia, but from an NSE standpoint, not as much as we had expected in China. Latin America is reasonable, Brazil, somewhat Argentina. So we're seeing some reasonable activity and probably a little bit better than what we planned coming out of Latin America for the NSE business. Alan, you want to comment on CCOP?
Yeah, I think for CCOP, we're seeing strength as we had expected on 100G throughout the world with particular strength in China. As Rex had indicated, we saw 30% growth in 140G modulator shipments, and I think that was pretty broad-based. I think what we're seeing, North America greenfields are networks are very slow, but a lot of activity around next generation of ROADM deployments and colorless directionless. So we saw, for instance, our book-to-bill on next generation ROADMs a very strong. Is a leading indicator that, you know, we're making good progress there. But I would say that the timing of those major deployments are still up in the air. And I think, 2015, I think the carriers in North America will have to deploy those new next-generation networks. EMEA, we saw strength in EMEA, but, again, those are the NEMs that we're seeing particularly, and where those end up going, it's hard for us to track.
It's kind of a follow-up on the NSC side. I failed to mention we do see some pickup in activity in India that's looking a lot healthier for the NSC business.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you. That's much appreciated for that color. My second question is on for Alan, actually, on the optical communication side. As I look at your gross margins, we're a bit light this quarter. Do you expect that to rebound, or how should we think about the gross margin going forward in optical communications?
Yeah, I think our expectations are that pricing is less aggressive in the current Q2, but as we're in the middle of the annual price negotiations and those haven't been settled out, it's still premature to know where the second half or the beginning of the second half gross margins will be in optical comms. I think as we roll out new products and 100G on the client side and the next generation of ROADMs, you know, our emphasis is really to rejigger the gross margin with new product introductions, and I think that we're well on our path forward on that side of the business. So I hope that answers your question.
Okay, thanks.
And your next question comes from the line of Mark Sue with RBC Capital Market. Please proceed.
Thank you, gentlemen. Maybe Alan, on optical, if we look at the 100 gig side, how should we think about your share gains near term and how long that might persist considering competitors are adding capacity? So maybe the sustainability of 100 gig. And then, Tom, as you progress towards splitting the business, does it preclude any M&A on your part or possible divestitures before the split actually happens? And perhaps you can also weave in your comments as it relates to the changing landscape with NetScout and Danaher.
Okay. Yeah, Mark, on your 100G question, I think we're still in the early stages of deployment and primarily in the core of the network. I think as we go forward, we'll start seeing 100 gig in the metro side in calendar 2015. And I think that will continue to drive volumes of 100G. You know, we did start volume production out of a contract manufacturer in Asia over the past few months, and that's really unlocking substantial capacity for us, and we're still planning on filling that up and adding capacity over time. So we're very bullish on the outlook for 100G in the short term as well as long term.
And on your second question, Mark, on M&A, kind of pre-split, there's nothing that precludes us from acquiring businesses, and we are continue to look across our three business segments or business units at opportunities. So there's nothing precluding us from doing that. And if it makes sense for us strategically, there's opportunities there. We obviously move on that. I think as far as potential divestitures, as I said at our analyst day, we clearly have a path that we're going down that we worked with the board on and did a lot of due diligence on that we think brings the best value for the shareholders. But if we do see interest out there in one of our businesses and we determine that that will bring greater value to the shareholders, we'll obviously pursue that path. I think as far as the NetScout-Danaher merger, I think it's very good for the industry. I think consolidation is good both on the NSC side and the optical component side. I would say that it wasn't very well received by the NetScout shareholders with their stock being down 20 to 25%, but I think from an industry standpoint, it will be helpful.
That's helpful, Tom. And perhaps as we progress through the process of there's a lot of hard lifting that needs to be done, does it feel that the time frame is now looking readily achievable? Does it seem like third quarter calendar of next year things might actually happen quicker than that?
We believe that milestone's achievable. We've done a lot of work and making a lot of progress on our milestones here. It's conceivable that could happen sooner, but we sure wouldn't make that commitment at this point. If we could pull it in, make sense, we would definitely do that. So as we look at milestones and are approaching those, we're obviously looking at the eye of can we pull them in. But I think we feel very comfortable with the Q3 of next calendar year. We'll continue to keep everybody updated. If we can do it sooner, we would definitely follow down that path.
Understood. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Good luck.
Thanks, Mark.
And your next question comes from the line of Patrick Newton with Stifel. Please proceed.
Yeah, thank you for taking my questions. I guess first on the optical side, you in your prepared remarks, or I guess in your presentation, it talks about record 100G transmission revenue that was up 77% year over year. You also talked about 30% growth in 40 and 100G modulators. Given that, I was kind of surprised to see your pricing was down 3.8% in the quarter, and I was wondering if you could discuss which products have been hardest hit by pricing and where pricing is holding up.
Yeah, on the question about the 140 gig, one was year-on-year and one was sequential. So was that your question?
No, that was just a statement that given the growth in those, what I would assume are higher margin products and less price-sensitive products, what's driving that 3.8% decline in pricing in the quarter?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the typical competitive landscape of our business, and I think we try to respond to what our customers' needs are, and we have competitors in the space that do things to fill up their factory, and I think some of the consolidation that's happening, over the last few quarters is going to be very helpful. I'm not going to get into the particulars of which product lines are seeing a higher ASP reduction. We're really more focused on generating new product introductions to offset that ASP reduction.
Okay, and then I guess, Tom, if we look at your SE business guidance and we just take that midpoint of $50 million and flatline it through the remainder of the year, SE would grow at about a 30% or 36% year-over-year growth rate in fiscal year 15. I guess, should we think that the back half of the year is going to have some type of fall-off, or can you help us think about how seasonality should look for SE through the remainder of fiscal year 15? And then maybe in the intermediate term, would it be right to think that the SE growth should exceed aggressively your 11 to 12% growth target, while the NE side, given a lot of the service provider statements you've made, is likely be below that 4% growth target?
Yeah, I think we definitely think that SE is going to grow much faster than the NE business, and it's, I think, part of it is the nature of what's happening with this move to more software, enabled architectures out there in the market. So I think there'll be less seasonality in SE than there is in NE, because I think the need for SE is emerging and it will continue to grow, and again, it's coming off a fairly low base, so you know, those percentages, I think, are achievable. I don't believe that it's going to drop off in the second half of the fiscal year, but like other things, we just don't have great visibility. So we're always cautious until we're, you know, moving into that period of time.
Great. Thank you for taking my question.
You're welcome.
And your next question comes from the line of Rod Hall with J.P. Morgan. Please proceed.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for taking my question. Can you hear me okay, by the way?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Just a couple of things, I guess, I wanted to ask. I know that when you guys announced the CTOP spin, you were still working through some of the tax issues, and I wonder if you've made any progress on that and whether you could give us any update on, you know, what relevant tax rates might be in the two entities and any other tax effects that you think would be worth us knowing. And then secondly, I didn't hear the first part of the call, so if you address this, I apologize. But I just wonder if you could talk about, you've made some management changes in NE, and I just wonder if you could talk a little bit about the changes and, what drove that and kind of how you see the management of that business going forward. Thanks.
Rex, you want to address that?
Yeah, happy to. On the tax front, in my commentary, we try to cover this as comprehensively as we could. We've made a lot of progress in terms of structuring the new CCOP entities going forward. So we've got a pretty good line of sight on what that structure is going to look like. It is one that allows us to take advantage of the fact that we do have a significant tax asset. Don't have an actual effective tax rate to give you in terms of an actual number right now. Would hope to be in a position to do that by the next call, if not sooner. But one thing I can definitely say and have said is it's going to be substantially below, you know, full taxpayer rate. And so I think people can take comfort on that. The other things we've also said on the NOLs, they will stay with NUCO, the NESE and OSP businesses, so that they can be further utilized for other purposes to maximize their value, but they're proving to be very useful in setting up CCOP.
I think as far as the management changes, what we recently announced was a change where David Hurt, who's the president of the NSE business, will be transitioning out of the company in the April timeframe. He'll help us through the next quarter, and then a major part of the transition period. David's done a tremendous job for the company and has really taken us through an unbelievable transition, a positive transition with that business. I think the thought process here is that we are going to delayer and remove cost as a result of this initiative, and we didn't feel like we needed both the CEO and the president of the NSE business. I think as far as the NSE management team, the leadership team's pretty well intact. They don't envision any major changes in that area.
Okay. And then maybe just one follow-up for you. There's been some mixed indications on the optical market. One of the big systems companies indicating weaker margins, although it feels like that maybe that's, you know, related to a single customer. Another company talking about very solid demand and a stable pricing environment. You guys don't seem to be, apart from the pricing coming down a little bit on components faster than usual, demand environment seems like it's pretty good. I just wonder if you could comment on, you know, how the visibility looks out there in the at least in the component market, and how you feel about the end markets.
Yeah, thanks, Rod. I think, you know, as I said before, we're seeing strength in 100 gig and very, very strong demand in the cloud and Web 2.0 data center build-outs. I think I can't really comment on our two customers and what's going on there, but I will say that, you know, I think we're going to continue to see strength in both Datacom and on the 100G, and then the question is, when do the new greenfields start getting deployed? And I'm a believer that it happens in 2015 calendar, just not sure when those full-scale deployments really start rolling out.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Alex Henderson with Needham. Please proceed.
Thanks. I was hoping you could give us a couple of just raw data points on growth rates. You made a comment about packet portal contribution. If you could give us a little bit of, you know, sizing on that, and what the rate of growth was on the datacom product lines in optical, as well as the ROADM piece.
Okay, I'll take packet portal first, and then hand it over to Alan on the optical component side. Continue to make good progress on packet portal. It did grow year on year, but it's still not a significant part of our revenue. But we do have three tier one revenue customers, both representing wireline and wireless domains today. We did during the quarter close our first NEM partnership agreement. That was really important for us as a next step. And we are seeing expansion of orders from those tier ones and things like VoIP, video, and LTE. So there's emerging, I think, three high-demand applications for packet portal, Ethernet performance and segmentation, carrier-managed enterprise, and mobile assurance. And we also believe it's directly aligning with the needs and the architectural shifts into SDN and NFV. So it does not represent a large amount of our revenue today, a high percentage, but continues, I think, to be a disruptive technology that's now being well received out there in the marketplace.
Yeah, and as far as Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. The datacom piece.
Yeah, datacom was up 14.8% sequentially, and ROADMs was substantially flat, but with a very strong book-to-bill. And where our TrueFlux ROADMs grew substantially in the quarter. So, again, I think greenfields really are needed to have ROADM deployments and ROADM growth, and the question is, when does that happen? But I think the bookings is a good indicator for us that it's going to happen.
Could you just give us the year-over-year growth rates on Datacom?
Datacom was 2.4% up.
Year-over-year?
Yep.
Thank you. And then last question I have for you is the RISO, you know, pooling exercise. Where are we on getting the full recognition of the revenues and matching revenues to costs and all that sort of good stuff on that accounting issue, which has been slowly winding through the company?
Yeah, so the outlook on getting VSOE at the moment is we're probably a number of quarters out before that happens. Having said that, we are able to take most of the revenue that the bookings would generate ratably. So I think we would expect to see steady improvement there as opposed to something that's, lumpy and transformative.
And so it'll be fully completed in the process, and you'll be, you know, one-to-one in two or three quarters, you say?
Probably longer than that. I would expect some time, probably in FY16 at this point.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And your next question comes from the line of Troy Jensen with Piper Jaffray. Please proceed.
Hey, congrats on the nice quarter, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Hey, so a couple questions here. Hoping you could touch on Gen 2 lasers. Looks like they're pretty strong in the quarter and what the gross margins are like on those products.
Yeah, we don't break out the gross margins by product. I think, you know, we're still focused on ramping that product, and as volumes come up, we'll get economies of scale and continue to improve that. I think,
just an indicator is 50.7% gross margin for our overall lasers business. You know, those are the numbers that we'll be public with, but we're not going to break out the different products on gross margins.
Right, that's fair. So, Alan, while I got you then, so, you know, CCOP was at the upper end of your range or your guidance. For revenues, gross margins were at the lower end, so I'm assuming that's mix, and that's actually why I was asking the Gen 2 question about margins to see if that was kind of the reason.
No, I mean, I think we had a record gross margin in our lasers business and record revenue, so I think that I think it was a more of a mix in the optical business and the lessening of absorption that we got by, you know, the substantially lower 3D sensing revenue from a year ago period.
Okay, all right, fair. And but one for you, Tom, you may or may not be able to answer it, but I'll just throw it out there. You know, spinning the business off versus selling it, you know, I guess, you know, my thought is, you know, if you spin it, you know, shareholders get fractional position in a, you know, company they may or may not want. You know, if you sell the business, you can put a big chunk of, you know, cash on your balance sheet and do some acquisitions and strategic moves and stuff like that. So can you just help me with kind of the decision to spin versus sell CCOP?
Yeah, no, we looked at, you know, what we think the value of CCOP is as we spin it out and the progress we think it'll make over the next 2 to 3 years. And as we looked at that value, we think that's very significant to the shareholders. You know, with a sale, it's immediate, and then, you know, there really isn't a chance to increase that value. So, you know, as I said, we have a very clear strategy and plan of record. And if we find another option or alternative that comes up that brings better or greater value to the shareholders, we'll definitely pursue that.
All right. Well, good luck, gentlemen.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of James Kisner with Jefferies. Please proceed.
I just have a related question on the CCOP business and the spin. If I'm just wondering if you were to sell this business, the CCOP business, prior to the spin, is there some tax liability that's created? Would you recognize a, you know, a capital gain that's taxable, and maybe perhaps you could quantify that?
So, James, if we were to sell CCOP at you know, at a value that we could certainly estimate, our NOLs allow us to shelter substantially all of the gain. There would be a tremendous gain, of course. But we would be able to shelter almost all of it.
Okay, and that would come out of capital loss, I guess, carry forwards. It wouldn't come out of your NOLs, right?
No, the NOLs are fine for both operating profits and capital gains.
Okay, that's interesting.
Gains on sales, excuse me, capital gains is not the right term.
Okay, so in some ways you'd be handing some value to Uncle Sam in that situation. Okay, just separately...
James, it's the other way around. We would almost a tax-free transaction if we were to sell CCOP or any of other business units for that matter.
Okay, but you'd be consuming some of those NOLs.
That's
the point.
That's great.
So, it's a quick one, just some gesture recognition, and I'll pass on PCs. I was just curious if you'd be willing to tell us if, you know, one of the products you're shipping into has recently been announced publicly.
To be honest with you, I don't know. I think for sure you'll see it before the end of the year if it hasn't already happened.
I mean, okay, thanks, guys.
These products are products that people have to put on the shelf before or put them in a warehouse to unveil them. So I think we're still early in that process, and frankly, I'm not aware if they have announced it or not.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
And your next question comes from the line of Michael Genovese with MKM Partners. Please proceed.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for taking the question. Two of them. First, to reconcile the NSE business, you know, in the 1Q, you came in higher than your forecast despite weakness in U.S. Tier 1, and you're guiding, I think, 2Q to the weakest, you know, 2Q sequential growth that I've seen in a lot of years. So does that suggest somehow that the strength outside of the Tier 1 goes that you saw in 1Q goes away, or just reconcile to me why there's no seasonality benefit at all and what's going on there in NSE?
Yeah, I think, again, if you look at what's happening with the NAM operators and what's happening in our space with others that have announced in and around the space. We're cautious. We don't think there's going to be any type of budget flush like there has been in past years, and we're cautious with what's happening with the NAM operators. We think it's going to be at least through this fiscal Q2 before they start placing any substantial orders. So it's really based primarily on NAM. I don't see any retraction of any magnitude in our businesses in the other geographic regions. Some of it's lumpy, but I don't particularly see that retracting.
Okay, got it. And then on the other thing, I feel like we just, with the last question before me, answered the question about tax implications if CCOP were to be involved in an M&A transaction before the spin. So what I want to ask you about now is tax implications if CCOP does a transaction after the spin, and specifically this IRS rule about tax-free spinoffs and engaging in M&A with partners you've been in previous discussions with, and I'm not sure whether it's a one-year or two-year period. So could you just talk about those implications as far as you know about them? You know, are there tax implications of doing it after the spin, and would you might have to use the NOLs to shield it if it was M&A post-spin? Thanks.
So this one's almost above my pay grade, but I'll give it a run. So there are definitely implications post-spin if you've tried to do a tax redistribution and then you engage in acquisition discussions, particularly with people that you may have talked to before the spin. If you get it is a two-year period, is my understanding, and if you get sideways from a tax perspective in that scenario, because the NOLs would remain with NewCo, they would be of no use to SpinCo in addressing that issue. Having said all of that, I actually see that as a pretty low risk. One would think that anyone out there that's wealthy enough to buy CCOP would understand that and do it before the spin versus after to avoid that problem.
Okay.
And your next question comes from the line of Joseph Wolf with Barclays. Please proceed.
Thank you. A couple of questions. One is, there was a deal in the tunable laser sector. I was hoping you could address the opportunity in tunables and modules and standalone and how you're seeing that as we move to 100G and if the sale actually helps the sector or tells you anything about what the seller thought about gross margins and the addressable market.
Yeah, I don't know what was in the seller's mind at the time, but I'll tell you that on the narrow line with 100G tunable lasers, we were behind in that market, but I'm happy to say that last quarter we had our first volume quarter, and we expect to grow that business for CCOP substantially in the second quarter. So we're broadening out our available revenue per 100 gig port that's shipped when we added the tunable lasers to the modulators that we ship today. I think any kind of consolidation is a good thing. And given the fact that the acquirer already had that technology, really just eliminates a competitor in the space. So that's a healthy thing for us and for the industry as a whole.
Great. And then I think you touched on this a little bit with the SC discussion and the lumpiness of the margins. But could you talk about any mix? Because it seems like at a higher level of revenue, there's a wider loss. And what that means is there that much variability in mix, or is it just the size of the orders? Is it a multi-quarter kind of task? And how at the end of the year or at the end of the fiscal year does that kind of even out?
Yeah, I think, it is lumpy from a booking standpoint because of the size of some of these orders are just much larger than what we would normally see in the NE. Business. And as I mentioned earlier, in our fiscal Q2, what we're projecting as far as bookings as a percentage of the overall bookings for NSE increases, and therefore that draws more expenses based on how we're allocating some of the sales and other expenses to bookings. So I think that's what creates the major lumpiness.
Do those bookings have a longer shelf life? Meaning, are those three-quarter bookings versus shorter-term bookings for the traditional business?
Yeah, so to turn those bookings into revenue does definitely takes longer than it does for any with the instrument. So, yes, it could be 2 to 3X kind of time frame.
So just one other color point on that, and it's why I made one comment that I made in the script. I think that the best way to look at NE and SE is to look at them from a revenue perspective and a margin perspective, and then when you get to the bottom line for those two units, I'd put them back together and look at NSE as a whole. And the reason for that is there's a shared sales force between the two segments, and obviously we've created the segments to try to get more revenue and margin visibility. But there's a shared sales force. The sales expenses are allocated best based on the relative bookings between NE and SE in a given quarter. So, as you can imagine, that's going to swing all over the place. But there was not another methodology we felt like we could use. So I would again start at the top, and when you get to operating income, put them back together.
Oh, that's helpful. Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Richard Shannon with Craig-Hallum. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, guys. A couple questions from me. First, on your Datacom business within CCOP, I think you talked about that business being flattish year-on-year for the September quarter. What's your view going forward here? What kind of growth can you see, and can you discuss to any extent your breadth of customer base? Is it rather broad, or is it fairly narrow that could drive some lumpiness going forward?
Yeah, the year-on-year was only up 2.4, and I think that's slower than the market growth for sure. I think if you look back a year ago, we had substantial one major customer deploying cloud data centers in a meaningful way that had taken a little bit of a pause and now is starting back up again. I'd say, you know, we're expecting Q2 Datacom to continue to grow. And as we introduce new products like our CFP4, where I believe we'll be first to market, I think we'll substantially gain market share over time. So the breadth of customer base, it's, you know, there's a handful of guys that make a meaningful impact, so it's not 20. And so as one customer may deploy large amounts of data centers, we'll see that go up and down.
Okay. Thanks for those thoughts, Alan. My second question is on 3D sensing here. Last quarter, you talked about a major PC customer starting to take some pre-production units. I think your prepared comments were some shipments coming here. Can you give us a sense of how broad the interest here is in the PC space for 3D sensing, and how long could it be before that business gets back to the levels that you saw with your gaming customer a year ago?
Yeah, it's really hard to say. I think, you know, the breadth of adoption will depend upon the applications that drive it. And, you know, as we saw with gaming, you know, if there's a hot game, you know, the units will sell, or they'll be incorporated into a different PC model. So I think it's still early to determine where and when and how big that is. But as we said earlier, we are now starting to ship production units. And expect to see that grow over the next year or two. I think the big question is, when will those wow applications hit the market that make people want to spend a little bit extra for a personal computer?
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
And your last question comes from the line of Alex Henderson with Needham. Please proceed.
Yeah, I've been doing these calls for a long time, and I can't remember ever asking a question on OSP, but I got to ask one. What's causing the big spike in that business quarter to quarter, and is it sustainable? Because, I mean, certainly that's the biggest percentage variance in our model.
Yeah, so as you know, we pruned out some of the low-margin business ending in the June quarter. And we said that we would backfill that primarily with anti-counterfeiting banknote products, and that's starting to pick up both, some inflection points around OVMP on some fairly significant currencies, and then we've got the threads coming on board also, so we get more real estate per banknote with the combination of OVMP and the threads. So that's the major driver there. We have some other new products that are coming on outside of the banknote anti-counterfeiting, and that's starting to pick up, but that really won't make a difference in this second fiscal quarter. It's really around anti-counterfeiting for the banknote. So if you look at that, what we said was when we pruned out those low-margin products, you know, the gross margins and operating margins would pop up 200 to 250 basis points. We've already seen that without the revenue getting back to the previous levels now. You know, the revenue will get back to the $50 million kind of level as we hit fiscal Q2, and then we would expect we should be able to maintain pretty close to that. And then there will be some inflection points above that, but it'll be hard to predict and a bit lumpy.
So there's no specific big build program that's kicking it up that's going to roll off or anything of that sort. This is a sustainable level at this going forward.
Yeah, we believe so because some of these new designs in the banknotes, you know, they go through different denominations, so we think that will last for a while. So there's not like one spike where, you know, that's going to happen and go away. It should last for a period of time.
Super. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our Q&A session. And now I would like to turn the call back to Mr. Bill Ong for closing remarks.
Thank you, Jackie. And this concludes earnings call for today. So thank you, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect and have a great day.